Welcome to Religion in the News. This is Brian LeBlanc for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be featuring articles from Christianity Today, from Religion News Service, from the Washington Post, and more. This broadcast is intended for people who are blind and print impaired, and podcast versions of this and other Religion in the News broadcasts may be found at our website, ncreadingservice.org. We'll begin this week on Religion in the News with an article from Christianity Today that I intended to read last week and ran out of time, so I'm going to lead off with this one this week. It was published on Christianity Today on January 27th, and the title of this article is Pew, How COVID-19 Changed Faith in 14 Countries. The subheadline, according to a survey of 14,000 people, the pandemic has strengthened religious belief most in the U.S., Spain, and Italy, while South Korea leads in lost faith. This article is by Jeremy Weber of Christianity Today. Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. James, the brother of Jesus, didn't have a global pandemic in mind when he wrote these words in the opening chapter of his biblical epistle to the 12 tribes scattered among the nations. But as the coronavirus closed churches worldwide, a global survey of more than 14,000 people has found that few lost faith, while many of the most faithful gained. Today, the Pew Research Center released a study on how COVID-19 affected levels of religious faith this past summer in 14 countries with advanced economies: Australia, Belgium, Canada, Denmark, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the Netherlands, Spain, Sweden, South Korea, the United Kingdom, and the United States. In 11 of 14 countries surveyed, the share who say their religious faith has strengthened is higher than the share who say it has weakened, noted Pew researchers. But generally, people in developed countries don't see much change in their own religious faith as a result of the pandemic. Overall, a median of about 4 out of 5 of each country's citizens said their faith was more or less unchanged. But leading the pack in strengthened faith was the United States, and leading the pack in weakened faith was South Korea. Americans were 3 times more likely to report their religious faith had become stronger due to the pandemic, 28% versus a global median of 10%. Next came Spaniards at 16% and Italians at 15%, whose nations were 2 of the worst hit during the coronavirus's deadly outbreak in the spring. About 1 in 10 Canadians, French, Australians, Brits, Koreans, and Belgians said the same. Meanwhile, Koreans were three times more likely to report their religious faith had become weaker due to the pandemic, 9% versus a global median of 3%. Next came Spaniards at 5%, followed by a tie between Americans, Brits, Belgians, and the Dutch at 4%. However, among only respondents who said religion was very important in their lives, a far larger share reported strengthened faith. This included 49% of faithful Spaniards, 45% of Americans, 44% of Italians, and 40% of Canadians. The global median was 33%. Once again, South Korea reported the most lost faith. Among Koreans who said religion was very important in their lives, 14% said their faith had become weaker, about 3 times the global median of 5%. They were followed by the French at 8%, Brits at 7%, then a tie between Spaniards, Dutch, and Swedes at 5%. Among respondents who said religion was not important or only somewhat important in their lives, 1 in 10 Americans reported strengthened faith, or 11%, followed by Spaniards and Koreans at 6%. The United States remains an outlier on religiosity. 49% of Americans told Pew that religion is very important in their lives, versus 24% of Spaniards and 17% of Koreans. Pew found no significant differences between men and women overall, but 2 exceptional cases were Italy and South Korea. In Italy, 20% of women say their faith has strengthened versus only 10% of men. In South Korea, 13% of women say their faith has strengthened versus only 8% of men. Pew also asked respondents to assess the pandemic's impact on the faith of their nation as a whole. Once again, Americans led the way, with 3 in 10 saying faith in the U.S. had become stronger. In most countries, people were more likely to say the religious faith of their fellow citizens had become stronger, global median 15%, than to say the same about their own faith, global median 10%. Significantly, in the Netherlands, only 7% of the Dutch say their own faith is stronger, but 17% say the faith of other Dutch is stronger. The same significant spread was found among Swedes, 3 to 15%, and Danes, 2 to 10%. Meanwhile, Koreans were most likely to say that religious faith in their nation has weakened, 17%, followed by Americans at 14%, then by Italians, Belgians, and Germans at 10%. Others matched or fell below the global median of 8%. In the U.S., white evangelicals were the most likely to say their faith had become stronger, at 49%, followed by Catholics at 35%, white non-evangelical Protestants at 21%, and the unaffiliated at 5%. This was a modest increase from April, when Pew found a strength in faith reported by 41% of white evangelicals, 27% of Catholics, 19% of white non-evangelical Protestants, and 7% of the unaffiliated. Pew's summer survey did not have enough black Protestants to break out, but in the April survey they led all American faith groups, with 54% saying their faith had been strengthened. Among all Americans, 24% said their faith had been strengthened in April, compared to the 28% in the summer. About a third of Americans believe the pandemic offers a lesson for humanity sent by God, at 35%, according to a prior Pew survey. A similar share, 37%, believe there is a lesson to learn, but it was not sent by God. Pew surveyed 14,276 adults by telephone from June 10th to August 3rd in the 14 countries selected for being advanced economies. Pew noted that all of the countries surveyed were under social distancing and/or national lockdown orders due to COVID-19. However, not all countries have experienced the disease in the same way, and the pandemic situation has changed substantially since the survey was conducted. During the fielding period, Australia, Japan, and the United States had rising numbers of infections, while Italy and some other European countries had started to recover from the large number of cases reported in April and May. Nearly all countries surveyed experienced significant spikes in infections and deaths in the fall and winter. Pew also found a third of respondents said their family's relationships had strengthened as a result of the pandemic, global median 32%. About 4 in 10 Spaniards, Italians, Americans, Brits, and Canadians reported this, as did 3 in 10 Belgians, French, Australians, and Swedes. Germans led the way among those who said family relationships had weakened at 13%, followed by Belgians at 11% and Koreans at 10%. Yongjae Cho, outgoing General Secretary of the Korea World Missions Association, told CT he saw two interpretations of Pew's findings among Koreans. First, it reflects that South Korea is a strong group-oriented society. The whole country has been affected as a group. General media were very critical of the Christian Church and her responses to the pandemic, Cho, a pastor and PhD who this week became the new president of Global Hope, told CT. During the survey period, there was very strong anti-government demonstrations against the among the conservative churches. The current government is generally against evangelical or conservative Christianity in Korea. That is one reason why people think that religious faith in Korea has weakened. Second, Korean churches place a high value on in-person communal worship. Christianity and other religions in Korea have emphasized the physical presence as an essential element of worship, he said. Because of COVID-19, the very restricted physical gathering of the churches has weakened the passion of faith. The findings in Italy were not surprising, said Leonardo J. Chirico, vice chairman of the Italian Evangelical Alliance. Though churches were closed for about 3 months, the majority Roman Catholic Church encouraged both positive thinking and traditional practices, such as indulgences and Marian rosaries, including one led by Pope Francis himself on national TV. What kind of faith is it? Is it wishful thinking? Is it a self-empowerment mantra? Is it a hope that all will go well and that we will soon go back to normal? The pastor of Rome's Breccia di Roma Church told CT. But where is God? Where is the gospel? Chirico said evangelical churches in Italy also face the unprecedented challenge of living in community, evangelizing, and caring for the elderly and the vulnerable, all at a public health-mandated distance. The presence of churches on the Internet has exploded quantitatively, but it does not mean that we have succeeded to manage it well, he said. The long-term consequences are still to be envisaged, let alone tackled. Will real community relationships resume? Will participation and involvement be a feature of future church life? We walk step by step, but it's not clear where we are going in terms of the overall gospel dynamic. It is sobering, and it should lead us on our knees to pray. Our next article comes from Religion News Service, dated January 26th. Faith in the COVID-19 Vaccine, Using the Black Church to Get the Word Out. The subheadline, the Reverend Jacques-André de Graaf of Canaan Baptist Church of Christ in Harlem talks about how black communities are overcoming distrust of the medical community. This is by Julie Schoenfeld of Religion News Service. Millions have already received the COVID-19 vaccination, and President Joe Biden has promised 100 million vaccinations in his administration's first 100 days. Already, however, fears that some Americans would resist taking the shot, lowering its effectiveness, are coming true. In early January, some 50% of frontline workers in Los Angeles were refusing the vaccine. In Ohio, 60% of nursing home staffers declined when offered a dose. It's well known that faith leaders can change minds about public health measures. Congregants are more likely to trust not only their leaders, but also those who share their faith, particularly people from their own tradition, wrote Elaine Howard Eklund, a Baylor University researcher, in a Religion News Service op-ed last year. To explore what American clergy are doing to support the vaccine effort, Rabbi Julie Schoenfeld, the former CEO of the Conservative Jewish Movement's Rabbinical Assembly, and now a master's candidate at the City University of New York's School for Public Health, is interviewing a series of faith leaders about their tradition's views on public health and vaccination and this vaccination effort. Last week, we interviewed Imam Mohammed Mayid, a former president of the Islamic Society of North America. We continue our series with the Reverend Jacques-André de Graaf, Associate Pastor of the Canaan Baptist Church of Christ, a predominantly African-American congregation in New York City, and chair of the Friends of Harlem Hospital. This interview has been edited for clarity and brevity. You've been a leader already on health matters. A recent national initiative you've launched is Choose Healthy Life. It's a partnership between Quest Diagnostics and the United Way, governed by the Choose Healthy Life organization. It's being rolled out in 5 cities, Detroit, Atlanta, Newark, Washington, and New York, each with a local clergy chair. In Atlanta, our chair just got elected to the U.S. Senate, the Reverend Raphael Warnock, and we're delighted. Each city will have 10 churches, each with a full-time professional health navigator, to lead us in testing and tracing and empowering our communities. It's my privilege to serve as the chair in New York, where we are using the Black Church as a platform to get the word out and to motivate and advocate on behalf of our community. The Black Church has been a champion on behalf of our community, going back to the struggle for civil rights, the fights against drug addiction and the crack epidemic, teen pregnancy, and HIV/AIDS. The pandemic is occurring, too, when there's racial justice unrest and issues dominating the headlines, economic uncertainty, food deprivation, so the church has to take its rightful place to preach our gospel. You're the social justice pastor at Canaan Baptist, and you're perhaps more aware of the issues of why the black community may be reluctant to take the vaccine. Well, some people point to the Tuskegee experiment, where black men were intentionally injected with syphilis and then monitored over years. But our predicament in America today speaks to health disparities in diabetes, hypertension, cardiac issues. Black women have a higher maternal mortality rate than any other group in the country. At hospitals, the doctors don't treat us the way they treat other people. And so our relationship to the healthcare industry and the healthcare system is different than other communities. When this crisis hit, that history was prevalent in our thinking. We needed bridge builders to get our folk. We met recently with Dr. Anthony Fauci, who mentioned Kazmikia Corbett, an NIH researcher whose work is instrumental in the development of the vaccine. That's important because black folk need to know that there's some folk who are in the room who look like us. There are now many in the scientific and medical community who are saying it's going to be all right. What is the advice that you would give clergy? One of the unspoken dimensions of this crisis is that we haven't been able to have the rituals of bereavement that help us get through these moments. It expands the grief because we haven't had that release. People didn't get a chance to say goodbye. So we as clergy have to be comforters in this hour, in an age when people are cynical about a lot of their institutions. There's an epidemic of mental health and other issues that are now beginning to manifest. We see it in gun violence, domestic violence, alcoholism, and all of these things are tearing at the fabric of our faith. And so we have to double down as clergy. We also have to ask who comforts the healers. So many clergy are not really good at self-care. We need to be mindful of how we take care of ourselves so that we can serve others. Another group that is struggling are healthcare workers. What spiritual counsel do you offer them? Being the child of a nurse, I know what it's like when people do a double shift or when somebody at home doesn't have their mother at Christmas dinner. At Harlem Hospital, we supported the creation of an oasis center in the hospital where staff could go just to get a break, a room of quiet and serenity where they can listen to the sound of a babbling brook and breathe eucalyptus or hear soothing music. 2 weeks ago, I got word that a member of the church had COVID. I've been in hospitals many, many times, but I had to put on a mask, put on a hairnet, gloves, the whole PPE. Then I went into the room, and as soon as I saw our church member, I realized it would probably be the last time I'd see him. As I was offering my prayer and my humanity, holding his hand, I realized that healthcare professionals are in this all the time, risking everything so that we might be well. It made me redouble our efforts to practice and preach on social distancing. The whole notion that we're in this together has to be coming from the pulpits. We need to say that it doesn't matter what public policy or the law says. It's the right thing, because otherwise we make their sacrifice meaningless. We wear a seatbelt, buckle up, motorcyclists put on a helmet. Everyone, put on that mask. Protect yourself. Protect your brothers and sisters. That is the message. We all share health. What else can we all be doing that you want to make sure we know? Stay connected. Somebody just needs you to call and say, I was thinking about you. Somebody needs you to say, I'd like to do shopping for you. We need to go the extra mile for each other and pray. The late Reverend Wyatt T. Walker, my mentor at Canaan Baptist Church, who had been Martin Luther King's chief of staff, talked about anyhow faith, entering into situations where you don't know what the outcome is going to be and giving each your best anyhow. Even when we don't know when or how the wind will come, we have to remain convicted that the best is yet to come. We'll turn next to an article from the Washington Post dated February 9th. This article is entitled, Evangelist Rabbi Zacharias taught his followers to ask tough questions, just not about his sexual conduct. And this is by Michelle Boorstein of the Washington Post. As a boy growing up in Canada, Daniel Gilman loved church and what he saw as compassion from the God of the Bible for those who suffer. As a college philosophy student, a question began to chip away. Is God just an inspiring fairy tale character, or does he exist? It was a celebrity evangelist named Rabbi Zacharias who filled Gilman with confidence that it was possible to be an intellectual believer in a God who is real. He was hugely helpful in my becoming convinced I could be intellectually honest and really believe, said Gilman, now 32, who became a minister with Zacharias' global $36 million a year ministry, built around a truth-seeking, evidence-exploring, Q&A style of evangelism called apologetics. He said, if evil is a category, there must be good. If there is good and evil, there must be a moral law. If there is a moral law, there must be a moral lawgiver. Now Gilman and millions of others are left with deep questions about good and evil, as independent investigators hired by Zacharias' Atlanta-based ministry are set Wednesday to release a report detailing serious sexual misconduct by the iconic apologist. Until his death of cancer at 74 in May, Zacharias had been one of the best-known figures of American Christianity, for radio and TV for decades. God gave us the greatest apologist of this century, Vice President Mike Pence said in May, at a memorial for Zacharias that was watched live by more than 1.2 million people around the world. Other luminaries who spoke included former NFL quarterback Tim Tebow and rapper Lecrae. Then White House spokeswoman Kayleigh McEnany broke down in tears in May on Christian television, talking about the death of a man she said made it so people didn't feel they had to check their brain at the door as a Christian. Zacharias is accused of sexually harassing multiple massage therapists who worked in the 2000s at two day spas he co-owned in the Atlanta suburbs. The allegations were first reported in September by San Francisco lawyer Steve Bauman, who runs a YouTube channel called The Friendly Banjo Atheist, and by Christianity Today. Investigators said in a very brief interim report released in December that they have found significant credible evidence that Mr. Zacharias engaged in sexual misconduct over the course of many years. In 2017, Zacharias faced separate allegations of abusing his power the year before with a much younger married follower and soliciting nude photos from her, then lying about it and publicly accusing her and her husband of extortion. It's unclear whether the investigation, led by Atlanta law firm Miller & Martin, will delve into that matter as well. Its mission, said the interim report, was to focus on allegations of abuse at the spas. However, the report said lawyers were given authority to follow other sexual misconduct leads, and they have. The final report is expected to be a dramatic comedown for a figure who is not only a staple in evangelical Christian culture, but often served as the representative of engaged conservative evangelicalism at secular forums, from the United Nations and Harvard University to Westminster Hall and Google headquarters. His ministry sends teachers to do talks around the world, runs classes for people who have spiritual doubts, and creates materials to train people to evangelize a secularizing culture. There's a sense in which I find myself re-examining the answers I learned from Ravi and questioning, is this true? Or is he, or just as he was a fraud, is his message as well, said Gilman, who worked as an itinerant apologist for Ravi Zacharias International Ministries until last month when he was let go, he says, after questioning RZIM's handling of the issue. It's not Gilman's faith in God that has been shaken, he says, but his faith in the Zacharias teachings. Fans and those close to Zacharias' wife and three children, who have all been in high positions in the ministry, have reacted in other ways. Some are burning his books. Thousands on the group's Facebook page are debating whether to believe the charges, and if they are true, asking whether to erase his witness as a Christian. Others are defending his legacy. At stake, and even if these allegations are true, there is no doubt that God actively blessed my dad. So what these individuals are saying, Nathan Zacharias posted on Instagram last week, is that God was wrong to do so, so we must now correct God's blessing/mistake by erasing my dad and his voice. At stake in the Zacharias scandal is also the credibility of his ministry, which was founded in 1984 and runs offices in 15 countries with nearly 300 staffers. That is because RZIM leaders have faced questions for years about Zacharias, ranging from his inflation of his academic credentials, about why the head of a global apologetics ministry owned two massage parlors, Touch of Eden and Javon Wellness, and why his personal masseuse was on the ministry's payroll. The questions have been raised since 2018 in reporting by investigative bloggers Bauman and Christian writer Julie Royce, as well as articles in Christianity Today and World, both evangelical publications. RZIM had until December largely defended Zacharias and portrayed him as a victim. In September, after Bauman reported Zacharias had allegedly sexually harassed and abused spa workers, ministry leadership offered staff talking points, urging them to say the allegations do not in any way reflect the man and friend I knew, and that the ministry would continue its work of helping the thinker believe and the believer think. Requests for comment to RZIM were not immediately answered, but its board of directors on December 23rd, after the law firm investigators said they had uncovered problems, said, "We are devastated for those who suffered from Ravi's misconduct." Some close to the ministry are asking how a group dedicated to open inquiry appears to have been unable or unwilling to do so when it came to itself. People who worked in or watched RZIM over the years say it was staffers' fearless dedication to seeking the truth about life's biggest issues that seemed to inoculate them from challenges to their credibility. Some staffers grew up Muslim and became Christian, and we knew how hard it was for them, the cost they paid. The reputation of the entire leadership is based on their intellectual ability to find the truth, said Carson Whitenauer, who previously led the U.S. speaking team and then took over its online platform for asking questions before leaving last month. It sometimes used RZIM's unofficial model, #NoQuestionsOffLimits, Whitenauer said. Openness to questions was the stated value, which made it harder to see that the real value was loyalty, he said. Gilman agreed, saying challenges about anything related to Ravi or his family could lead to trouble for a staffer. Ravi's wife Margie was chief culture officer at the ministry until she resigned last week. Daughter Sarah, chief executive. Daughter Naomi, head of Wellspring, RZIM's humanitarian arm. And Nathan was a video producer there until he also resigned recently. You can say, I'm having doubts about the reality of who Jesus was, but if anyone questioned any Zacharias on the team, that wasn't welcomed, Gilman said. That was the culture in 2017 when Lorianne and Brad Thompson, a couple from Ontario, reached out through a lawyer to Zacharias. Their letter described the couple meeting Zacharias, whom Brad deeply admired, and how it led to a friendship between Lorianne and the apologist, 30 years her senior. And then over months, him encouraging her to first share details, including her sexual abuse as a child at the hands of her father. And then, she said, soliciting nude photos. She began to spiral because of his selfish and predatory behavior, the letter said, until finally she told Zacharias she needed to tell her husband. "Are you going to tell him it's me?" Zacharias wrote in leaked emails, according to blogger Julianne Smith, who writes about abuse in spiritual settings. "You promised you wouldn't, Lorianne. If you betray me here, I will have no option but to bid this world goodbye. I promise." Saying that the couple's mental health, their marriage, and their children had been seriously harmed, the Thompsons said they would either go to court or he could pay them $5 million. Zacharias instead told his board and filed a lawsuit against the couple, alleging Lorianne had shockingly sent him inappropriate images out of the blue, that he blocked her, had done nothing wrong, and that the couple had conspired to extort him. "We felt really abandoned by God," Lorianne told the Washington Post in an interview the couple did this weekend. They said their faith is now focused on God, and they are trying to rid their minds of the theology and words of Zacharias. "If Christ is true, he is the best example and the highest ethic. That's the best example we can find. If it's not true, at least we've lived in a way that's ethical," she said, as her husband stared off, his face apparently pained. "If Christ isn't true," she said, "who do we follow then?" As the case became public, RZIM supported Zacharias, and staffers said the Thompsons were seen in the ministry as dishonest aggressors. "I believe there will need to be an apology to the Thompsons for the way the ministry has unjustly portrayed them as extortionists, despite the lack of evidence," said Max Baker Hitch, an apologist with RZIM's Oxford Center for Christian Apologetics in England, in a letter to the ministry leaders in December. He said although Zacharias' reputation is in tatters, the ministry could act justly and show the world the power of the cross. What will happen to the powerful ministry Zacharias built is already a topic of debate. Does the scandal merely show how no one avoids sin, but that Zacharias' gifts and work as an evangelist should still be honored? Or instead, should Christian bookstores and churches remove his books and his ministry be paused to focus on how to help those who were hurt? Shut the doors, take the resources to try and identify other victims, and do what you can to serve them, says Boz Chavijan, an attorney and advocate for survivors of abuse who is working with the Thompsons. You can do great work in the world, but if your organization is sponsoring or represented by someone who is hurting others and destroying individual lives, don't call yourself a Christian organization. We've got just enough time for a short article from the Associated Press. COVID-defying nun toasts 117th birthday with wine and prayer. Question, how does one cram enough candles onto a birthday cake for one of the world's oldest survivors of COVID-19? Answer, with 117 candles, you can't. A French nun who is believed to be the world's second oldest person was celebrating her 117th birthday in style on Thursday. There were plans for champagne and red wine, a feast with her favorite dessert, a mass in her honor, and other treats to toast Sister Andrée's exceptional longevity through two world wars and a recent coronavirus infection. It's a big day, David Tavella, the communications manager for the nun's care home in the southern French city of Toulon, told the Associated Press. She is in great shape. I went to see her this morning. She's really happy. She wanted me to tell her the schedule for the day again. Sister Andrée's birth name is Lucille Rondon. The gerontology research group, which validates details of people thought to be 110 or older, lists her as the second oldest known living person in the world. We've run out of time for this week on Religion in the News. We thank you for joining us and hope you've enjoyed the program. I'm Brian LeBlanc for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. And we'll talk to you next time on Religion in the News.